The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period, the immediate consequences of Anjou's Italian adventure. The immediate consequence was, of course, to remove the dominant figure on the French council from the political scene. Power passed into the hands of Anjou's brothers, the Dukes of Berry and the Duke of Burgundy. Berry was the older brother, but he was an idle man without Philip's political acumen and ambition. He was generally content to defer to him, provided that he was given a free hand in the provinces of the south. No one doubted the real seat of government was now at the Hotel Artois, the luxurious mansion north of Les Halles, surrounded by gardens and outbuildings, where Philip established his Parisian residence. It would, however, be a mistake to suppose that Philip could do as he liked. The administration and the parliament were still full of Charles V's old servants and were loyal to his memory. There were military leaders and territorial magnates of considerable stature who were not beholden to him and whose views could not be ignored. The young king's maternal uncle and guardian, the Duc de Bourbon, the constable, Olivier de Clisson, a natural constraint whose office, wealth, and close personal relationship with the young king made him largely independent of the other men's patronage. The marshal, Louis de Saint-Cyr, and the admiral, Jean de Vienne, were closely associated with the victories of the 1370s. Courtier captains like Egerard de Coucy, a grizzled veteran of 3 decades of French and Castilian civil wars, Pierre de Villeneuve, both of them highly regarded by military nobility and the population of Paris. The Duke of Burgundy's decisions were always a weight of consensus which represented a strong break on personal government. Over the years, however, the transfer of power from Anjou to Burgundy would have had a significant impact on the direction of French foreign policy. Philip of Burgundy did not share Anjou's personal loyalty to the Avignon papacy. He was much less interested in the Gascon March and the affairs of the Iberian Peninsula. His interests were concentrated in the north, where he was intent on restoring Louis de Mal's authority in Flanders. Philip had never felt his brother's animosity against England. In the long term, he realized that an accommodation with England would be necessary if he was to take effective control of his wife's inheritance in the Low Countries. The Duke of Burgundy's first challenge was the financial condition of the French state, which Louis of Anjou had left unresolved. A partial reestablishment of the tax system by the Estates General of Languedoil at the beginning of the year had failed. After a halting start, the flow of receipts appeared to have settled in at about a tenth of the sums anticipated. The standing army of 6,000, which the delegates in Paris had envisioned, never came into being. Apart from the defense of Nantes in January 1380, which had involved only limited forces, no significant military enterprise had been attempted since the king's accession. A large part of the problem was the reduced geographical area from which the king's taxes were now drawn. The revenues of southern and central France were reserved to the Duc de Berry. Burgundy, supporting the increasing magnificent train of life of its duke and its revenues of the Loire provinces assigned to Italian campaign for the Duke of Anjou, substantially the whole burden of fighting the English had been borne by taxpayers of a very limited region, Paris, the Ile-de-la-France, Normandy, Picardy, and Champagne. These provinces comprised a third of France's population, its most fertile agricultural areas, and most of its richest cities, but they were also the most politically organized region of France, where opposition to royal taxation on the death of Charles V had been the strongest. On January 14, 1382, the provost of the merchants and the representatives of Paris were summoned to Vincennes, where the court was residing. When they arrived, they were brought before the king. He was attended by his uncles and the rest of the royal council. The Parisians were told that the king required them to re-grant all the taxes in force before the death of Charles V. They asked for time to consider this and were given 1 day. When they returned on January the 16th, they were admitted to the council chamber one by one and required to give their answer without knowing what the others had said. The cowed Parisians submitted. On the following day, the council published the new taxes. It was a hole-in-a-corner affair, for the government needed time to manage public opinion. A crier appeared in the enclosed courtyard of the Châtelet. Another mounted the marble platform in the great hall of the palace on the island during the lunch hour and made the proclamation to the empty chamber, With effect from March the 1st, 1382, the sales taxes on wine and other goods exposed for sale were to be reinstated at the rate in force under Charles V. The salt tax, the gabelle, would be reimposed at an increased rate. Equally high-handed but less well-recorded, negotiations were conducted with the provinces of Languedoc with the same outcome. The news of what had happened only gradually spread through the capital and then from town to town across northern France. During the next 6 weeks, the government looked for tax farmers willing to collect the new taxes. Tensions rose in northern towns, each waiting to see what the others would do. During the terrible week when London had been under control by Wat Tyler and his allies, Michel Pinton, the future cantor of the Abbey of Saint-Denis and the official historian of Charles VI, was in England on the financial affairs of his house. The murder of the Archbishop Sudbury was reported to his little group of Frenchmen on the day it happened. Someone said, quote, "I tell you that before long, worse things than these will come to pass in France. God forbid that France's ancient loyalty should be defiled by such horrors," replied the deeply conventional Pinton. Yet his interlocutor proved to be a better prophet. Violence will begin in the city of Rouen. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.